The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Coming up in the second segment, we'll be going through some of the feedback that we've gotten in recent days. As I say, if you'd like to join the number of listeners who are commenting on the programs and also telling us how they listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, just send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. Also coming up in the second segment, I'll update you on the Mystery of the Ages goal. After everything is said and done, the program that played over here this past weekend here in the UK, it may end up generating the third highest number of requests that we've had this year. We need a few more to trickle in over the next few days to reach that third spot. But we'll talk more about that and also update you on the figures. The number of Mystery of the Ages that have gone out this year as a result of the television programs. Later in the show, also I want to just comment on a new study showing that really something terrible is happening to Americans, particularly middle-aged white Americans. We'll look at that in detail in the Bible study section of segment two. Well, 4 years ago, just about 4 years ago, I guess this week, President Obama said this: I try not to pat myself too much on the back, but this administration has done more for the security of the state of Israel than any previous administration. That's what he said in 2011. And today, Benjamin Netanyahu arrives at the White House to try to fix all that's wrong, all that's gone wrong with the U.S.-Israeli relationship. This is what the New York Times reports this morning. The tortured relationship between Barack and Bibi, as they call each other, has been a story of crossed signals, misunderstandings, slights, perceived and real. It says, burdened by mistrust, divided by ideology, the leaders of the United States and Israel talked past each other for years until the rupture over Mr. Obama's push for a nuclear agreement with Iran led to the spectacle of Mr. Netanyahu denouncing the president's efforts before a joint meeting of Congress. So here these two come together at a real low point in U.S.-Israeli relations. To be sure, there's a lot to discuss. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of this meeting today, and what the coverage will be like in the U.S. press and in the Israeli press. And meanwhile, Palestinian attacks against Jews continue on with no end in sight, and the Western media still isn't very concerned about it. Not too much coverage, not too much reporting. There were more attacks this morning in Israel. And you may have seen the footage of the stabbing yesterday morning. Chilling footage of this woman in a hijab, wearing a hijab, pulling a knife out of her purse and going after this Israeli security guard. That security guard was there, by the way, in order to protect Jewish children. He was there trying to protect the children. And this woman went after him with a knife. Another Israeli teenager who was badly injured just last week when a Palestinian driver rammed his car into him at high speed. That boy was pronounced dead yesterday. So it's not getting any better. If anything, it's more tense, it's more violent than it's been in some time. And then you look at what, in the wider sense, what Iran is doing. You haven't seen too much coverage on this either this past month. Over the last few weeks, Iran has taken two more Americans hostage, adding to, I think, three others. So that makes five total. And as the New York Post points out, the kicker here is that Iran is holding the nuke deal hostage, threatening to junk it if President Obama tries to punish the country for all these fresh outrages, for all these acts of belligerence, taking on two more hostages. And now, of all things, Iran is holding the nuke deal over our heads, over America's head, saying you better back off. You better back off with this outrage, or else we'll just chuck the nuke deal. And of course, President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry are not about to have that happen. The New York Post says when they seized one of the new hostages, the Iranians also grabbed his computer, forced him to unlock it, and that allowed the Revolutionary Guard to launch what the Wall Street Journal reports as a massive cyber attack. So taking hostages, launching massive cyber attacks. This nation that the U.S. administration just assumed right away that it would lead to such a better relationship. This deal with Iran back in, what was it, May or June. We're not even really a few months into it. And we see these acts, these hostile acts, these blatant, audacious acts of terror, really. Well, switching over to Europe over the weekend, there were demonstrations that turned violent in Berlin. This was on Saturday. Anti-immigration protesters taking to the streets, protesting Angela Merkel's open-door refugee policy. These anti-immigration groups, they are gaining in popularity. Maybe it's not tens of thousands taking to the streets just yet, but it's several thousand. It's not just a handful. It's not just a few hundred people that the media tries to make into a big story. We're talking about an estimated 5,000 protesters waving German flags in a show of nationalist spirit, calling on Merkel to step down, calling her a traitor to the German people. Last week, we gave quite a bit of coverage to the comments of Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, that panel discussion that he joined in on last Wednesday in California, and Gutenberg explaining why Europe's political system is failing, not just Germany, but Europe. He's coming out with some strong criticism for Angela Merkel, for the leaders in Europe, for Barack Obama. He believes he's got some answers. He's only just kicked off or restarted his political career. But he certainly is becoming much more outspoken. How much longer before someone like that is right back in the thick of it? It was interesting to me just how much we ended up discussing that. Right as the articles that are going to be in the November-December Trumpet magazine were posted on our website, has Germany's strongman finally arrived? My father's article, that is, and that together with Brad McDonald's Europe's Old Demons Return. Look for both of those in the print edition of The Trumpet, November, December. Well, just to follow up further on that panel discussion, this is a blog posting at Fortune.com. Fortune's the company that sponsored that three-day conference in which zu Gutenberg spoke. But this is on the Fortune.com website, the PowerSheet blog. It says, weighing in today from Paris, whereas throughout Europe, the refugee crisis is constantly in the news, observers outside Europe may not realize how profoundly this crisis threatens the European Union. Former German finance minister Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg, with whom I spoke earlier this week at the Fortune Global Forum, says this situation is the most serious challenge to face Europe since the fall of the communism more than 20 years ago. In at least one sense, it offers lessons to leaders everywhere. The lesson centers on this question, he writes. Who's in charge? Who's in charge? That's the lesson. You'll recall the analogy that Gutenberg made last week. How that it's like 28 physicians or surgeons surrounding a patient who's dying. And while they're working to basically just keep that patient alive, there's no progress being made. And there's no one in charge. There's no one with the leadership to take charge of the situation. It says here the answer here, no one exactly, which is the problem, which is a problem for the EU generally. He goes on and talks about how it was there with the Greek financial crisis. And then now the refugee crisis derives from the same conflict that Europe aspires to be a unified whole yet has no clear leader. The refugee situation is graver because it threatens one of the foundational goals of the Union, a Europe with free travel across borders. It says overrun by a growing wave of refugees entering Europe mostly from the south and east, 3 million are forecast for next year. How is this problem going to be dealt with? Where is this leading? Is Europe just going to blow up as an experiment and go away? Or are there great changes coming? And will a leader step forward? Who is in charge? That's the question. No one really right now. 3 million next year. It says Hungary, Croatia, Austria, and others are considering building border walls or fences. It says nationalist political parties opposing a united Europe are attracting followers almost everywhere. British voters will vote next year on whether to leave the Union. As with financial policy in the Greek crisis, refugee policy is sort of happening undeliberately, with no person or institution bearing responsibility. It says further, business leaders don't deal in the fate of nations or of millions of lives, yet they face this same basic issue all the time. One of the commonest reasons for failure of strategies and projects is that no one is sure who's in charge. For example, identify a customer of any business and ask who's in charge of the company's relationship with that customer. You'll typically hear that several people are, or you'll even be told proudly everyone is, which means, of course, that no one is. Is it any wonder that companies are so often blindsided when a customer leaves? Watch a successful leader at the end of a meeting. He or she will summarize what the group has decided to do and who specifically is responsible for doing it and by when. Example, Apple, the world's most valuable company, follows a long-standing policy of identifying a DRI, a directly responsible individual, for everything it wants to do. This is Fortune magazine talking about an important principle with respect to leadership and how it applies in the business world, in the corporate world, and using Europe as an example of what not to do, of how it can't work. He concludes here, I don't know how Europe resolves its deep-rooted contradiction of needing union-wide policies without a union-wide leader. Business leaders have it easier. They at least can make sure they always know the answer to who's in charge. Who is in charge? Now, that's what we've been preparing you for. That's what we're waiting for. Someone in Europe to step up and take charge. The empire is already there. It's just waiting for the emperor to show up. The empire's already on the scene. It's waiting for that king. It's waiting for that Daniel 8 man. It's waiting for the King of Fierce Countenance, as he's called in Daniel 8:23. Back in 1995, Bernard Connolly, he wrote a book that we've quoted from and referred to often. This is now 20 years old, this book, The Rotten Heart of Europe, where he talked about this battle for control over the European superstate. Back then, he said it was the French technocrats squaring off against the German federalists. And both sides claiming to fight under that banner of Charlemagne. That was 20 years ago. Here we are 20 years later. There's no question which nation has now risen to the top. Which nation is now the dominant power in Europe? Now, you go back further than that, much further. Connolly's quotes, 1995. Herbert Armstrong said back in the 1960s, we know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. Prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators will arise in Europe and give their power to Germany. That's Mr. Armstrong writing in the 1960s. How could he know this? Well, we're still waiting on the one man. We're still waiting on the Daniel 8 man. But look, the empire is there, and it's, as we've said before, even in the Bible, it's described as a mixture of iron and clay. So we shouldn't be surprised that there's so many differences between these nations and nationalistic parties that are gaining in popularity because of all these crises. But here Gutenberg comes along last week, and he's talking about 28 surgeons, but no one with the authority, with the power yet to step up and lead. No one who's willing to risk political office or power or a position to make unpopular decisions, to do what's necessary and needful to bring that union together more powerfully, more strongly. We know how the U.S. of Europe, the United States of Europe, will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. That's what Herbert Armstrong said in the 1960s. 10 kings dominated by Germany. He said Germany would lead Europe. He said that 50, 60, even 70 years ago. In many ways, this was like his signature prophecy. Anyone familiar with Mr. Armstrong, anyone familiar with The World Tomorrow or the Plain Truth magazine would have been well aware of this. And here Bernard Connolly, just a commentator, he comes along 5-10 years after Mr. Armstrong died, talking about how this European union was really a cloak for German ambitions. And Connolly asked, who's going to be Charlemagne? That's the thing. That's the question. Who will be the leader? Who's in charge? That's what that blog posting was asking at fortune.com last week. I think it was posted Friday. Who will be the next Charlemagne? Well, last week we took you through a few of those verses in Daniel 8, in Daniel 11, about that leader coming in by flatteries. And I just want to take a moment here to refer you also to Daniel 2. This prophecy about the Daniel 2 image, which gives us the time frame of all of these prophecies that are unfolding and where we are right at the very end, right at the very bottom of that image, down where the feet and the 10 toes are, where you see this mixture of iron and miry clay. Daniel 2 and verse 40 says, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, And as iron that breaks all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas you saw the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. That's referring to that final resurrection of the so-called Holy Roman Empire. Those 10 toes representing 10 kings. 10 kings of the empire. Just as Mr. Armstrong talked about, prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators, arising in Europe, giving their power to Germany. But it's important that we remember, that we keep in mind where this is leading. As verse 44 says, "And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." I mean, here we are right in the time of the toes of the Daniel 2 image. Those toes are now taking shape. Those toes are now on the world scene. And this prophecy says, in the days of these kings, that gives us the time frame. Jesus Christ is going to return in the days of these kings that are now forming in Europe. What a time to be alive. So much of Bible prophecy is for our time today. And we're seeing these prophecies. We're seeing them being fulfilled at such an alarming rate. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial, headquartered in Edmond, Oklahoma. This broadcast, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, comes to you live from our sister campus in Edstone, England. And so you can get the live stream of this program or any on KPCG at kpcg.fm over the internet. Email us, don't forget to email us, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Coming into this past weekend, our Mystery of the Ages total for the year stood at 1,380. This past weekend, then, we replayed a program from April 12th titled "The Mystery of God Should Be Finished." And over the weekend, counting the calls that came in, the text messages, and also the requests made on our website over here, there were 182 total requests, which means that repeat program currently stands as the fifth highest response this year. And it's just barely behind numbers 3 and 4. If we get 4 more requests to trickle in over the next few days, then that program repeat will move into the third spot, the third highest for the year. It just needs to get up to 186. Now, in that program, we offered Mystery of the Ages and Malachi's Message, and I don't have the exact number, just an estimate, but there were a handful of people that called in to request the literature that already had Mystery of the Ages, so we're going to deduct just a little bit from that 182 figure. To give us an estimate on the total Mystery of the Ages that we're sending out. In any event, the good news as far as those calling in to request Malachi's Message who already had Mystery of the Ages, I'd say that's a pretty good contact to make. Individuals out there who've received MOA already and hopefully have been reading it and studying it, who are continuing to watch the program, and then now requesting Malachi's Message. In any event, of that 182, we'll deduct about 32. Let's say 32 of those and just estimate that of the total, 150. I don't want to get too fuzzy with the math here, but if anything, through the course of this year, I think we've maybe underestimated the total request for Mystery of the Ages, because there have been a few that have requested other literature offered on that program or this program And then requested Mystery of the Ages as well. In any event, the estimate is this. When you put together 1380 with 150, that brings the total, the estimated total, to about 1530. 1530, that's 470 shy of our 2000 goal. We have 7 weekends left in the calendar year. So if we don't quite make it, we know that we're going to be close. With 7 weekends left, we've got another Mystery of the Ages program set up for November 28th and 29th, and then again 3 weeks later on December 19th and 20th. So at least 2 more programs will offer Mystery of the Ages, which would make it a little bit difficult, probably, to get up to the 2,000 figure. But we do have, I guess you could say, a wild card available in December 26 and 7, the last weekend of the year. And on one of those 2 weekends at the end of December, we'll probably replay that program that got the highest response so far this year, the most important book since the Bible. So at least 2 more weekends we'll be advertising Mystery of the Ages, and depending upon how that first one goes, we'll probably decide yay or nay if we want to offer Mystery of the Ages on 2 successive programs. We don't want to overdo it. I know the ones we've done in the middle, like the Sabbath booklet last week, really generated quite a large response. And so there's quite a bit of literature that we have to offer, and I'm sure with some of the new offers that we make, we'll probably get quite a good response. In any event, we're very close, and it's worth giving it everything that we can, I think, to try to get up over 2,000 requests for Mystery of the Ages by the end of the calendar year. A few emails that have come in over the last few days. This one says, thanks so much for today's show. This is in response to the one we had last Wednesday on the federal debt jumping $339 billion in one day after Congress put together a package for President Obama to raise the debt ceiling to an indefinite peak, to where the president can just basically have a blank check between now and March or April of next year, I think it is. This listener says, you're right, we can't keep this up much longer. All the signs point to a horrible blowout. Again, thanks for the warning. This second response comes in from Oregon. And he says, Friday's show was a stirring program. Every word spoken, complimented, and seemed to magnify Bible prophecies, as several world events through the lens of Bible prophecy were talked about. And how fitting it was to switch gears, so to speak, and to talk about being grounded in God's truth. We'll kind of have something more to say about that, or a similar theme, here in just a moment. He says, though, referencing John 9 and Hosea 4:6, because, I think it was John 8, actually, in any event, it says, because the more one takes the time to prove all things and follow these programs, and read the literature and watch their Bibles come alive, the more disgusted they become with the world about them and their own human nature, because the more they see it all as God does. I listen to the programs on my laptop at thetrumpet.com. I click the TV tab or the radio tab, and I can listen to any program more than once if I like, which is great. Great work this week, gentlemen. That's from Portland, Oregon. This next response says, today's message was quite humbling. This is in response to the one I think we had on Thursday, what it means to keep the eighth commandment. And it says here, she writes, thanks for being so straightforward. I know that God listens because he answers earnest prayer. I listen live through thetrumpet.com and SoundCloud. That's coming from a woman in St. Louis, Missouri. This one here from Florida, it says, thank you for this spiritually uplifting and informative radio program. I truly thrive on listening to God's radio. It says, it's a great blessing to listen in each day. I listen on SoundCloud coming home from work, on my smartphone, and on the Trumpet website. I'll keep on doing my part in watching and praying and backing and supporting this great work of God. Keep up the great work. That's from Florida. And then finally, this one here from Cape Town, South Africa. Just a note to say thank you for the very informative and interesting programs you're broadcasting. The Trumpet Daily and thetrumpet.com is where we get our real news. We listen to the Trumpet Daily, Trumpet Hour, and other KPCG radio shows on an iPad, via the internet, either live streaming or downloading the shows in the evenings. It's such a privilege to access recorded shows and listen to them after business hours. Sadly, though, many in Africa do not have internet. We're so excited about this phase of the work. Hard to believe it's been 100-plus radio shows already. Keep up the good work. It's really appreciated out here in the field. That's coming from Cape Town, South Africa. So if you'd like to send in a comment or a suggestion or to simply let us know where it is you listen from and how you listen to the program, just send us your email or an email at td@kpcg.fm. That's td@kpcg.fm. Well, I want to talk now about this study I mentioned at the top of the program, this report coming out last week. There were a few articles in various newspapers about this. I'll just refer to a couple of articles first that talk about the study. I didn't really go through the study in detail myself, mainly just reading a few items about the study. This new paper by Angus Deaton and Ann Case, his wife, which discusses the mortality rates among middle-aged whites in the United States. This is Paul Krugman. He's in the New York Times. It says, as a number of people have pointed out, the closest parallel to America's rising death rates, driven by poisoning, suicide, and chronic liver diseases, is the collapse in Russian life expectancy after the fall of communism. No, we're not doing as badly as that, but still. And then it says, what the data look like is a society gripped by despair with a surge of unhealthy behaviors and an epidemic of drugs, very much including alcohol. That's what this study is showing, that in America, middle-aged America, in particular white America, you have a society gripped by despair and this surge of all sorts of unhealthy behaviors. This epidemic of taking drugs, of alcoholism. This picture goes along, it says, with declining labor force participation and other indicators of social unraveling. Something terrible is happening to white American society, and it's a uniquely American phenomenon. You don't see anything like it in Europe. For all of its problems, you don't see it in Europe. Certainly not like America. Something is terrible. I mean, something terrible is happening in the United States. What is behind this? At the Telegraph, this author says, for a large number of blue-collar workers, hope has been swept away by alcohol, drugs, and suicide. He writes, is it RIP, rest in peace for the American dream? The founding ideal of the richest nation on earth? Reports of its death have been doing the rounds for decades, but have generally proved much exaggerated. Despite setbacks, America's capacity to inspire, innovate, and grow has always eventually bounced back. Now along comes the latest winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics, the British-born Angus Deaton, with some hard evidence of very serious deterioration, if not outright death. With his wife, Ann Case, Deaton has crunched the numbers on mortality and morbidity in the U.S. and found that among middle-aged, white, non-Hispanics, things are not going well at all. Unlike virtually every other advanced economy, where rates of death and ill health in this particular cohort have been falling steeply, in the U.S. there has been virtually no progress for 25 years. Worse, the rate has picked up sharply since the turn of the century, and is now far and away the worst among rich, industrialized economies. That's America it's talking about. Far and away the worst among rich, industrialized economies. Something terrible is happening to white American society. The Telegraph says the chief causes of this reversal are alcohol, drugs, and suicide. A quite shocking finding that looks worryingly indicative of a broken and divided society. That's what we see. a broken and divided society. It's not quite Russia, which has virtually third world rates of mortality among middle-aged men, but it's getting there. Finally, it says here, for a large number of non-college-educated white Americans, hope and aspiration has given way to despair and addiction. What has gone wrong? The higher death rate is identified by Professor Deaton cannot be entirely blamed on the destructive consequences of the financial crisis. It long predates it. And in any case, mortality rates have continued to decline in most European countries, which, if anything, suffered an even deeper slump. The point being that it's particularly bad in the United States. And as he asks, what has gone wrong? What has gone wrong? Why is it particularly terrible in America? Let's look at Deuteronomy 11 for the last few minutes of the program here and just point out a few scriptures that it would be good to think on in light of this. What's wrong with America? How, following on that, how important is it for you, dear listener, to avoid the many pitfalls that we see in our society of negative thinking, of discouragement and despair, of addiction, escapism? These things are on the increase. And we've talked, actually quite often, about the few, the faithful few, who are actively engaged in support for this work, and knowing that Satan has been cast down, as it brings out in Revelation 12, and looking at the problems of this world, and looking at man's inability to solve those problems or to make any progress whatsoever, it really does draw attention to just how important God's work is and how important your role is in support of that work. Deuteronomy 11 and verse 26, it says, "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse, a blessing if you obey the commandments of the Eternal your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods which you have not known." This is like a nice short summary of what it talks about over in Deuteronomy 28. We'll look at a few high spots from that chapter in just a moment. But God here in the book of Deuteronomy saying that if you're blessed, it's because of obedience. And if we're disobedient to God, then curses set in. I mean, that's a basic theme of the Bible. Blessings for obedience, cursings for disobedience. Let's look then at chapter 28, the blessings and the cursings chapter. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 1, it says, "And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all nations of the earth. If," God says, "if you hearken diligently to God's voice and observe to do or to obey his commandments," verse 2 says, "and all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God." All these blessings, and then in the next many verses, it speaks of those blessings. You'll actually be overtaken by these incredible blessings. God blessing you in the city and in the field. God blessing your offspring, your children. What we produce, our work, the flocks, the goods. He'll bless the weather. He'll bless the finances. Whether we're at home or when we go out or when we go against enemies, we'll be blessed above all nations, God said to Israel. But what if they didn't obey? Verse 15, it says, "But it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you." It's a very simple, straightforward message. As I say, a basic theme of the Bible, and yet it's not a popular one today, not even in religion. Even though it's right out of the pages of your Bible. Look at verse 45. Let's just go more toward the end of this blessings and cursings chapter. This is Deuteronomy 28 and verse 45. And really, we're skipping over some pretty sobering verses that you ought to read the entire chapter and see what God says. There's a duality to this. We don't have time to really go into that on this particular program. But it's what our peoples are facing yet again. And so many of the curses that are setting in right now, as we've discussed in recent days, they're self-inflicted. It certainly does involve disobedience to God. But what is wrong with America? Something is terribly wrong. The depths of despair that so many are in, running from reality, turning to drugs, any form of escape, it's everywhere. And especially in the United States, the richest, most prosperous nation in the history of this world. All of those blessings, all of that prosperity, not because of our own righteousness by any means, but because of promises made to Abraham back in the book of Genesis, way back in the book of Genesis, blessings that were just poured down upon our people. We talked about this last week when going through some of the problems with the U.S. budget, just the runaway debt levels, robbing from future generations. What a curse. What a curse deficit spending is. Self-inflicted. Just like many of these problems, the study, last week's study, brings out despair, discouragement, depression, addiction. Verse 47 says, because, notice this, getting to root causes, it says, because you serve not the Lord your God with joyfulness, and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. That's what it got down to in ancient Israel. You didn't serve God with joyfulness. You didn't serve God with gladness. Now, looking at us today, isn't something wrong? If we're not serving God with joy, if we're not filled with joy, verse 48 says, therefore shall you serve your enemies, which the Lord shall send against you, in hunger and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want of all things. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck, until he have destroyed you. That's what's coming. Because of this attitude, not serving God with joy, God really wants us to have a perfect heart, to give because we love to give, not because of a, well, I have to kind of an attitude, but to really live the give way. Notice this quote. This is from a Good News article from 1961, where Herbert Armstrong said, one of the most common sins among God's people has always been griping, complaining, called murmuring in the Bible, this attitude of criticizing, finding fault, grumbling. It's negative, he said. It's unspiritual. It's a disease that produces unhappiness and loss of faith in the perpetrator, and it's a great annoyance to those who hear it. It spreads, in other words. It spreads like cancer. Read Numbers 13 and Numbers 14. Read what happened when those spies came back with a bad report. They exaggerated all of the negatives, and the whole congregation of Israel was stirred to wrath, and they wanted to go back to Egypt. They wanted to leave Moses. And Joshua and Caleb did everything that they could to try to get people back on track and to say, look, God has promised to give us this land. We have nothing to worry about. There are occupants there, but God says he'll remove them and that he'll give us this land of promise. But boy, that attitude of negativity, of depths of despair, it was so strong there in Numbers 14. And yet when they had it right, when they were serving God with joy, with gladness, what a difference. This article says, when the children of Judah, without any weapons, began to march directly toward the onrushing three allied armies. This is picking it up in the middle of an example here in this article. In any event, the people of Judah were just singing praises to God. It says the God they were praising began to win the battle for them. I have known many, Mr. Armstrong says, to be healed when they began to thank and praise God for it in advance. Count your blessings, he said. Count your blessings. Get your mind on them. They're more and greater than you probably realize. This is the recipe for overcoming griping and for finding happiness. You have to be proactive. You have to concentrate on the positive. You have to think about Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. Think on these things and do them. You have to think about Acts 20 and verse 25. It's more blessed to give than to receive. What a lesson. What a lesson. I think any parent can appreciate this all the more. When you think about what a difference it is when that little child or that toddler, as opposed to being ungrateful or unthankful, mean-spirited, selfish, self-centered, contrast that with a little child that's been taught well, that's been brought up in the way that he or she should go, that says thank you, that says please, that says I love you, that learns how to ask politely and then gives thanks in response. It's the same on the spiritual level. God blesses children who are appreciative and thankful. He blesses children who count their blessings, who get their mind on God and the things of God. Count your blessings. Mr. Armstrong said, get your mind on them. That's so important to do, particularly at the time we're living in right now, with Satan and his demons cast down and confined to this earth. And with so many people, particularly in the nations of Israel, the nations where the descendants of Israel reside, the nations where there's been so much prosperity, so much wealth, so much abundance, and the sin of ingratitude, so widespread, ungrateful, not appreciative, not thankful, not counting blessings, but rather seeking ways to escape from reality, to slip into the depths of despair and depression. As Mr. Armstrong said there, count those blessings and really concentrate your mind on them. They really are more and greater than you probably realize, even if you happen to be going through a sore trial, a really difficult period. We have to remember this formula. This is the recipe, as he said, for overcoming negativity, griping, murmuring, and really finding happiness with God. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live streams at kpcg.org. FM. Don't forget to send us your feedback this week on this program or any of the others on KPCG. You can send those requests or responses to td@kpcg.fm. Well, we're off and running on yet another week. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.